Okay, so good morning, July 14th, 2018. This is the Narki Street Congregation Bible Study here in Jerusalem, Shabbat morning, and we are looking at Numbers 17, verses 16 to chapter 18, verses 24 in the Hebrew, or in the English, it's Numbers 17, verse 1 through Numbers 18, verse 24. And then the Haftarah is from Isaiah 11. Verses 1 to 11. And let's open in prayer. Lord, thank you for bringing us here this morning. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for each person who's here with us now in person or in spirit, listening somewhere else in the world. And we just ask that you would speak to each one of us through your word, through your spirit. And help us to grow closer to you. In your name we ask this. Amen. So let's start off by reading. And since we're reading in the English, number 17, verse 1, what we usually do is we read around the table, read a few verses if you want. If you don't want to read, you don't have to. And we usually start with Gemma and go around this way and just read a chunk. Of whatever you feel like.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and get from them a rod with each father's house, all their leaders according to their father's houses. 12 rods, write each man's name on his rod, and you shall write Aaron's name on the rod of Levi. So there shall be one rod for the head of each father's house. Then you shall place them in the tabernacle of meeting before the testimony, where I meet with you. And it shall be that the rod of the man whom I choose will blossom. Thus I will rid myself of the complaints of the children of Israel, which they make against you."
So Moses spoke to the Israelites, and their leaders gave him 12 stars, one for the leader of each of their ancestors. Aaron's star was among them. Moses placed the stars before the Lord.
Next day, Moses entered the tent of the testimony and saw that Aaron's staff, which represented the house of Levi, had not only sprouted, but had budded, blossomed, and produced almonds. Then Moses brought out all the staffs from the Lord's presence to all the Israelites. They looked at them, and each man took his own staff.
The Lord said to Moses, "Bring Aaron's staff back before the testimony to be preserved for a sign to the rebels, that you may bring their murmurings to an end before me, that they will not die." So Moses did as the Lord commanded him, and this is what he did. The Israelites said to Moses, "We are bound to die. We perish. We all perish. Anyone who comes close to the tabernacle of the Lord will die. Are we all to die?" At the end of the chapter. Or is my thing crazy?
So the Lord said to Aaron, "You and your sons and your father's household with you shall bear the guilt in connection with the sanctuary. And you and your sons with you shall bear the guilt in connection with your priesthood. But bring with you also your brothers, the tribe of Levi and the tribe of your father, that they may be joined with you and serve you, while you and your sons with you are before the tent of the testimony.
They shall perform duties for you and for the whole tent, but they must not approach either the utensils of the sanctuary or the altar, otherwise both they and you will die. They are attached to you in order to perform the duties of the tent, meaning for all the service of the tent. No outsider shall approach you. You yourselves shall perform the duties of the sanctuary and the duties of the altar, so that wrath may never again come upon the Israelites."
This letter. You are to be responsible for the care of the sanctuary and the altar, so that wrath will not fall on the Israelites again. I myself have selected your fellow Levites from among the Israelites as a gift to you, dedicated to the Lord, to do the work at the tent of meeting. And only you and your sons may serve as priests in connection with everything at the altar and inside the curtain. I am giving you the service of the priesthood as a gift. Anyone else who comes near the sanctuary must be put to death.
And the Lord spoke to Aaron, "Here, I myself have also given you charge of my heave offerings, all the holy gifts of the children of Israel. I've given them as a portion to you and to your sons, as an ordinance forever. This shall be yours of the most holy things, reserved from the fire. Every offering of theirs, every grain offering, and every sin offering, and every trespass offering which they render to me, shall be most holy for you and your sons. In a most holy place you shall eat it. Every male shall eat it. It shall be holy to you.
This also is yours, whatever is set aside from the gifts of all the wave offerings of the Israelites. I give this to you and your sons and daughters as your regular share. Everyone in your household who is ceremonially clean may eat it.
All the best of the olive oil and all the best of the wine and of the wheat, first fruits of these things that they give to the Lord, I have given to you. And whatever first ripe fruit in their land they bring to the Lord will be yours. Everyone who is ceremonially clean in your household may eat it. Everything devoted in Israel will be yours. The firstborn in every womb which they present to the Lord, whether human or animal, will be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn sons you must redeem, and the firstborn males of unclean animals you must redeem.
As to the redemption price, from a month old you shall redeem them by your valuation, 5 shekels in silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. For the firstborn of the ox, or the firstborn of the sheep, or the firstborn of the goat, you shall not redeem, they are holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar, and shall offer up their fat in smoke as an offering by fire for soothing aroma to the Lord.
But their flesh shall be yours, just as the breast that is elevated, and as the right thigh are yours. All the holy offerings that the Israelites present to the Lord I have given to you, together with your sons and daughters, as a perpetual due. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord, for you and your descendants as well. Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no allotment in their land, nor shall you have any share among them. I am your share and your possession among the Israelites.
I give to the Levites all the tithes in Israel as their inheritance in return for the work they do while serving at the tent of meeting. From now on, the Israelites must not go near the tent of meeting, or they will bear the consequences of their sin and will die. It is the Levites who are to do the work at the tent of meeting and bear the responsibility for the offenses against it. This is a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. They will receive no inheritance among the Israelites. Instead, I give to the Levites as their inheritance the tithes that the Israelites present as an offering to the Lord. That is why I have said concerning them, they will have no inheritance among the Israelites.
Okay. Right. And
or not necessarily wanted the leadership, but they didn't challenge you. That's challenging.
Right. And who is Korach? Who does he come from? We talked about it last Shabbat.
He's a son of.
He's from the tribe of
Levi.
To start off, he's from the tribe of Levi. And then there's all this whole system of sons coming from Levi. And as you know, there's different parts of Levi that do different things in the greater priestly system. Well, actually, Levites aren't all priests, but the sons of Aaron, they are the priests, right? And so that's one branch of the Levites.
But was Korah a son of Aaron? He wasn't, was he?
No.
He's a cousin.
Right. Everybody's a cousin in this country.
Yeah.
So there's four main branches. There's Gershom, there's Merari, and there's Kohath, or Kahath. And then there's Aaron, who actually is a branch of Gershom, right?
Yeah.
Kehat. Okay, sorry. So Aaron is technically from Kehat, but then he's kind of like Manasseh and Ephraim for Joseph. They have like their own special dispensation, if you want to say. So there's this kind of complaint, this rebellion that comes up against who can be the priest, and how is it decided in that story in chapter 16? How do we know who are the ones who are going to serve the Lord?
Miracles.
Well, what? What happened?
You're not swallowed by the earth or burned with fire.
So the ones who are not...
And your rod buds.
No, we haven't got to the bottom of the rod yet.
It's all naked. Right.
They get swallowed alive, right? So that's, you know, when you have no favor, you get swallowed alive. And so now we come to this story, which it's interesting. They're woven together here. And so it would seem that this story of the rods is a, not a repercussion, a continuation of the story of, okay, now here is another sign that this is who I have chosen to be, to represent the people to the Lord. So who could be a priest, right? So what is this story? What are the specifics here? What does it say? What happens? What did we just read? That's my question. Okay, great. So, staff, what's the word in Hebrew?
Mate. Okay. Mate. And I don't know how to put this in transliteration, but that's what I'll do.
So, mate. And there's 12 of them. Mate, what does mate mean? Numbers loves the word like matot, the you know, the B'nai Yisrael.
Oh, it's a parasha today, Masei Matot.
Yeah, it's interesting how that there's a connection this morning with the regular parasha. What's the more common term that we have for tribe?
Shevet,
right? Okay. Shevet. Shevet Yisrael, right?
Shevet is also a matte. Yes.
Right. So, also, kind of like staff, rod, sometimes we translate it scepter. Shevet.
So, which is scepter? Shevet or matte?
Shevet is usually connected to. When you think of all of your big prophecies, like with Bilam, he says, I see a scepter rising from... Yeah, let me... Numbers 24. I haven't gotten there yet. 24:17, like the popular one that we all know from Christmas. Numbers 24:17. I see him, but not now. I behold him, not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. So there it's Shevet. And, okay. So we'll continue on with that talk a little more. So they put these 12 staffs together. And what happens? You said it blossomed, Sheila, but what specifically... What's more specific about the story here?
One blossom, so it's an almond blossom.
Okay, good.
Almond.
Yeah.
So there's some blossoming going on. And it specifically says it's a shaked almond.
So what's our famous story with the almond?
Jeremiah chapter 1.
Okay, so let's go to Jeremiah chapter 1. This is the call of Jeremiah, very famous. Before I formed you in the womb, verse 5, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Interesting. You see kind of a context here? There's like, I'm setting you apart. I'm appointing you. I am saying you are the one that I've chosen for this task. Verse 6, Ah, sovereign Lord, I said, I do not know how to speak. I am only a child. But the Lord said to me, do not say I am only a child. You must go to everyone I send you to and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and will rescue you. Then the Lord reached out his hand. He touched my mouth and he said to me, now I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over nations and kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant. The word of the Lord came to me. What do you see, Jeremiah? I see the branch of an olive tree.
No, an almond tree.
Sorry, what did I just say?
Olive.
Okay, yeah. I took my, I was mixing my thing. Of an almond tree. Thank you. It's good to do that to make sure people are listening. You know? You're not just all like nodding off and yes, yes, whatever you say. Okay, I see the branch of an almond tree. And verse 12. The Lord said to me, you have seen correctly, for I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled. Okay, so what's the famous word play here?
The word play here is that an almond is a shaked, and to watch over something is shaked.
Shaked.
It's a play on the word shaked.
Yeah. Right, so almond is shaked, and then in Hebrew we have, like in present, shaked is to like watch over. The root is Shin Kuf Dalet. And
it's seriously watch over.
Right. And what is being watched over here?
The word of God.
The word of God. That's interesting. The word of God is important to God.
Is it watching over the word, or is it watching over the performance and doing it?
I mean, it's one of these. Yeah, I would. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the word. You know, let's not get Protestant here, and you know, like this floated out of heaven, and we need to guard the Bible. But it is about the reason why God's word's important is not because it's something that we touch and we worship, it's because it's something that happens.
Right.
It's the truth. It's something that's done.
I've always understood it here. I mean, the whole of the rest of the book is about the performance of his word. I mean, everything from giving the land, the covenant, the second covenant, the bringing the people back to the land. I mean, Jeremiah's full of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There must be a link then with the numbers, which is where you're going back to, which is the calling of Aaron to be a priesthood, to be separating out to do something special.
Right. And so that's kind of my main point here, is it's a special calling. This is, you know, obviously there's something here tangible. Aaron gets an almond branch. And, you know, a mate is in itself.
This is what Aaron had, right? It's a mate. And in here with Jeremiah, it's a makev. It's not a mate.
A makev is like a walking stick.
They're all kind of like synonyms of the great big tree, you know? A makev is connected to, like, David when he goes out to fight Goliath. He's got a makev.
That's a makev.
Right. Jacob says, you know, I went and I traveled, and all I took with me was this makev, and, you know, the Lord took care of me. Zechariah has some prophecies in the second latter part of Zechariah where he talks about I've got two maklot, he's a shepherd, and so it is, you know, you could say Makel is maybe more simple, but probably not. It's probably just, they're all part of the big picture of the language involving wood that's used to hit people with, or to hit wolves with, or to walk with, or just like today what we use wood for, to protect ourselves, I don't know. So, but it is two different words in Jeremiah and Aaron, but it's the same idea, right? You have an omen. You have an omen in both stories. Okay. So, we're going to get into a lot of synonyms this morning.
The translation here says, I'm watching to make sure my threats are carried out. Which is kind of interesting.
My word. What did you go to Jeremiah? What threats?
No. Well, in the translation,
it says,
yeah.
Branch of the almond tree.
Right.
Observed correctly. This means, but next.
Right. So, they're trying to, what kind of translation do you call that? They're trying to fill it in for you.
What verses are you in Shira?
12. Jeremiah 1:12.
Oh, I think it.
But the word in Hebrew is just devah. So it's just word. Yeah. They just helped you out. Another thing with mate, we said, you know, going back to Aaron's staff, rod, shaft. Where does it first appear in the Bible? And I'll just go ahead and help you out. It's in Genesis. And
which word?
Mate. Genesis. Genesis. It first appears in Genesis. Appears one time. Well, actually twice in the same passage. And it's in Genesis 38. And if you go there. What are you talking about? Of course it's Yehuda. What are you? I don't understand. I'm just saying turn to Genesis. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yehuda. We're communicating. Genesis 38, the story of the infamous story of Judah and Tamar. And we all know the story. Did Judah's wife die? Was that? Okay, so his wife's dead. And apparently he didn't remarry, so he goes off to the area of town where there's prostitutes, and he finds one who turns out to be his daughter-in-law. And
she was expecting to be given.
Right. Yeah, sorry. It's not that she was a prostitute, but she was trying to teach him a lesson, I guess. I don't know. It's very complicated. But so verse 18, I don't want to go into the whole story. What happens is she says, before you can sleep with me, you need to give me what?
The staff that is in your hand, the makelah.
Yeah, your seal, your chotam, your cord, your patil, and your mate, your staff. Yeah. And so those three things are given to her. She sleeps with him. And then she steals those three things so that later on when she's about ready to be killed by him for doing what she did, she pulls... She pulls out those three things. So what does this mean about the mate? Besides just being a stick.
Well, I think it's a sign of his innocence.
Pledge. Okay, what's a pledge?
Identity.
Yeah, I would say it's an identity.
It's personal. So, you know, maybe when there were the tribes with the matot, and they all have their staffs, maybe it's like what we had in the medieval period where you've got your family standard of, this is my, what do you call that thing, coat of arms or something? What?
Coat of arms.
I mean, this is all, I don't, I'm just throwing it out there. I can't prove any of this.
Conjecture.
It's all conjecture. So don't take it home. But it seems, at least in the story of Judah, there's a way that you know that that staff is his. So maybe he's got his name carved on it. I don't know.
Even in Africa, a lot of them will carve something on the stick that's particular to their tribe or their family.
Clan. Yeah. So when Aaron walks in, or not, when Moses brings the 12 staffs in and puts them down, it would seem they're not just random staffs, but they're very personal, and they identify those tribes. So
this is something to keep in
mind. He says, go and get it, pick up, take your staff. They were sequestered down, take it. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It says they write their name on each little staff.
Right.
So it is a question mark. It is like, make sure your own crest is on it so I know whose is whose.
Right. Mm-hmm. They can't just put it.
What verse is that? The writing?
17:2.
Okay, you want to just read that so everybody hears it?
Speak to the Israelites and get 12 staffs from them, one from the leader of each of their ancestral tribes. Write the name of each man on his staff. On the staff of Levi, write Aaron's name, for there must be one staff for the head of each ancestral tribe.
Okay, great. So it was written on there.
Yeah. This makes it sound like that each tribe had a specific staff that represented them. It's like the banner, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, and in the story of Judah, we know it was also very personal to identify who he was. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of, want to just put that out there.
It's actually very interesting, isn't it? Because on a broader spectrum, this whole question of tribal identity is really well identified. It's not just, well, you know, my great-great-grandfather was Aaron. I mean, there's a way of it going down, and I suppose the nearest we get to it is things like crests and national flags.
Mm-hmm.
And our identity with a certain flag, having just watched England lose, you know. I mean,
England lost to Croatia at the World Cup.
So it seems here there's a tribal identity, and then you write your specific name on it.
And then one other idea is maybe you've got the 12, you know, staffs, and maybe they're all made of different woods. You know, maybe Aaron's is almond, maybe theirs is, olive.
Like Harry Potter,
that's right.
Yeah.
So is there any way you can parse that out even further? Because mm-hmm. if you go back to the Tumar story, there's three items there.
Right.
And now are they just all synonyms for the same thing, or is there something distinct about each particular, like the signet and the cord and the staff?
Well, we have in the Israel Museum the stamps or the seals. They have, those are very common. They found them all in the City of David area with names of, you know, you just, so that is that. And then the thing with the cord, the zapatil, I don't have a background in it.
Maybe it would be the necklace that you have the staff on.
You carry the seal on.
Yeah.
Typically, spike, I've been taught to spike the four corners of the garment.
So it's somewhere down here. So
it's the thing that David cuts off on Saul.
Zapatil?
But no, it's not. But people assume that it's on here. It's
oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I guess the reason why I'm asking this is like if you parse out those like different nuances of each particular item, then the, you know, the tag becomes much more specified as to what it's representing. If you're going to draw the connection between the two.
Right. I think the main connection is all three are identity papers, you know, that they're all somehow, it's like your wallet.
I think the idea in Tamar's story, she's being super careful. She has three ways to identify it. So there's no way he's going to get out of this.
Like, you know, when you apply for a passport or something, you have to have two or three forms of identity. Mm-hmm. So.
Or even, you know, you've always got a driver's license and passport.
Exactly. Right. Multiple. Witnesses. Okay, so this is the first thing I want to think about. I think the next thing is let's go ahead and read the Haftarah, and then we'll finish with the big picture. First off, I just want to say this: Isaiah 11. Everybody knows these, right? This is a very famous scripture. They are not a part of today's parasha that comes from Babylon. And this is part of the reason why Lois threw out this idea to us is you have a lot of Christian messianic proof text that are a part of this parasha, and to look into, because they were basically culled from this Palestinian parasha in Babylon 3-4 centuries after Jesus. And so it's interesting that here we're going to read one of the most famous passages of scripture connected to Jesus. And so let's do it. Verse 1.
Do we know that, sorry to interrupt, but was it a conscious plan to pull out, let's say, Isaiah 11:53 and so on, out of the Palestinian Talmud, or did it just happen?
Well, not the Talmud.
Not the Talmud,
but
the Palestinian.
This parasha, right. Yeah. I don't have a huge background in this. I just know from everything that I've read over the years is part of rabbinic tradition. If you want to remove something that you don't believe in, you just ignore it.
Right.
It's like silence.
Right. It's silence rather than conscious.
And it is a little conspicuous that the passages that are left out happen to be Isaiah and Isaiah 53, all these major passages that support the Christian claims.
Right.
So, does it seem like coincidence?
It's not coincidence. I like it. You just ignore what you know. It's like not having Moses in the Haggadah.
Sounding very conspiratorial. Well, there was a Jewish scholar in the conference in 2000 that we had, like not a Christian scholar, he suggested that.
Which one? Who?
I don't remember. I was at the conference.
But who? The Christian or the Jewish scholar?
The Jewish scholar suggests that.
Said what? It was conspiratorial.
We're removed. No, we're removed because of their connection.
Right.
Because of their Christian connections. So I'm saying it's not just something that we're not the only ones who imagined it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
We may have imagined it too, but
I've heard this from multiple Jewish scholars. So here we go. Isaiah 11:1. A shoot will grow out of Jesse's rootstock. A bud will sprout from his roots. The Lord's spirit will rest on him, a spirit that gives extraordinary wisdom, a spirit that provides the ability to execute plans, a spirit that produces absolute loyalty to the Lord. He will take delight in obeying the Lord. You will not judge by mere appearances or make decisions on the basis of hearsay. He will treat the poor fairly and make right decisions for the downtrodden of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth and order the wicked to be executed. Justice will be like a belt around his waist. Integrity will be like a belt around his hips. A wolf will reside with a lamb, and a leopard will lie down with a young goat. An ox and a young lion will graze together as a small child leads them along. A cow and a bear will graze together. Their young will lie down together. A lion, like an ox, will eat straw. A baby will play over the hole of a snake, over the nest of a serpent. An infant will put his hand. They will no longer injure or destroy on my entire royal mountain. For there will be universal submission to the Lord's sovereignty, just as the waters completely cover the sea. At that time, a root from Jesse will stand like a signal flag for the nations. Nations will look to him for guidance, and his residence will be majestic. At that time, the sovereign master will again lift his hand to reclaim the remnant of his people from Assyria, Egypt, Pathros, Cush, Elam, Shinar, and Hamat, and the sea coasts, or the islands of the sea. So, What is the connection here with our passage in Numbers 17? Well, Numbers 15 doesn't have Shevet. It has Matteh. But you're right, Isaiah 11 has Shevet. The rod that comes out of his mouth is there. But what about with Numbers 17? That's the very first verse. Yeah. It's a little different, but in both cases it's yatsa. One is that it comes out. In Isaiah 11, it's a hotel.
So here's what I was talking about. We're going to have a lot of words here. Hotel. What's the translation there?
Rod.
You have stem. What comes out of Jesse?
A stem.
I have a shoot. What do you... Any other thing?
A netzer.
What? Yes.
I have a netzer as a stem.
No, not the netzer. What?
Oh, netzer is a...
What comes out of Jesse? I have a shoot. Anybody have anything different than that?
Yeah, I have a stem. I have a rose coming forth.
Rod is a potential translation.
Do you have a rod?
A rod or and a stem of Jesse.
The study tools have rod. The translation there actually has shoot.
Okay, rod, shoot.
A shoot will come with a stem.
Okay, hoter. Unfortunately, the only other example we have of hoter in the Bible is in Proverbs, where it says a rod is made for a fool's back. Everybody knows that one, right? Because you beat the fool. It's hoter there. And so that's where the rod thing came from. I think what really matters here, again, is it's part of this whole world of sticks. Matteh, Shevet, Hoter, Makel. It's something coming out of Jesse. And it says specifically it's coming out of what of Jesse?
The root.
Okay, so we have Geza. What are your translations there from Jesse?
I've got the stem of Jesse.
The stem of Jesse?
Yeah.
Stump.
Root?
No, root is that there. Yeah, sure.
Right. Any other translations? Tali, what do you say, Geza?
Geza?
It's like today.
It's like the trunk.
Like the trunk? Okay.
But I think, I hope I'm not wrong, but I think that hotel shapes in the Geza, when we are doing the thing, keeping like it's a male tree to multiply itself without needing female or a male tree. It's just like the way Jesus came into this world.
So you're saying that there's ground? You're saying there's ground, like it's coming out near it, or?
Either from it or near it, I don't know. Right there, but it doesn't require a male and a female.
For Hotel.
Yeah. The vegetative
reproduction. The teaching of the Ad Kedumim was the first one who made me understand it a bit. That a Hotel is basically the main trunk. It's the main.
The Hotel?
The trunk. It's the real heavy branches that gets broken off. And can be used as a staff or a stick, like him, for a shepherd.
Okay.
It's a heavy branch. The netzer is the little shtuyot that comes out of the bottom, and they always connected it to Netzarim, and the Yeshua himself comes out of the main trunk, growing out of the main trunk. That's the teaching from Sneyot.
So, what was that, the netzer?
I'm not talking about your son.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, Tzemach is not mentioned here. But I think Tzemach is very close to Netzer.
Yes. Tzemach is more of a spring, isn't it?
And you grow. Spring.
says a netzer is going to come out of the choshim.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just say.
And they do in an olive tree. That's what you see all the way around an olive
right.
tree. You get these tzarim.
I don't have any good answers. I'm not a botanist or a biblical botanist, but just to let you know that because we're a bunch of city people today, we really have a big distance between us and the Bible when it comes to understanding kind of a fine, agricultural metaphors that are used so often. And so...
But both of these come in parallel.
Sure.
So one sprig is coming out of the root, and one is maybe a little closer to the trunk, but it's essentially the same idea.
Of course, of course. I'm saying like the fine tooth comb is probably won't increase our understanding at this point. So the similarity, if you go to number 17, the verse is... Let's see, number 17. Sorry.
And just to go back to 11, it's important to say that coming out of Jesse makes it fairly clear that it's an olive tree. We've been talking generally trees, wood, green.
Why do you think it's an olive tree? No, I mean, I'm not saying why not. Just, that's interesting.
That's always what I've
understood. Right. Well, and also the olive tree is the oil that you anoint a king with.
Yeah.
So that.
Yeah.
I don't know, not every tree does that. If you cut it down, they don't just start growing out of the root.
Right.
Right. It's only the olive tree. The olive tree is the one that goes on and on.
Yes.
Okay, so. Numbers 17:8. What does it say there? At the last part. Vayotze ferach, vayatzetz tzitz, vayigmol shkedim. So Aaron's rod, it brings out. Like a flower or something like this, and then also blossoms.
And so you have a word there, yetze, which is, it's the same root as what we have in Isaiah 11 of, it will come out of the Geza of Jesse. Exactly. One's a hefill and one's a cob. But still, for sure, I think this is your main connection here between the two. So what's the difference between these two stories of Isaiah 11 and number 17? Who is this? And who is this staff with the almond blossom?
And it even has almonds, right?
Sorry, almonds. Yeah.
It has flowers, it has buds, and almonds at the same time.
Yeah. Number 17 is about who?
Aaron. And Isaiah is about who?
Yeshua.
It's about, I guess my question is, which tribe is it about?
Yehuda.
So we've got two different tribes here. Let's keep that in mind. I want to, before we kind of bring all that together, I just want to point out a couple of interesting connections here in the text. Look at Isaiah 14:29. Don't be so happy, all you Philistines. Just because the club that beat you has been broken. For a viper will come out of the serpent's root. and its fruit will be a darting adder. So it's interesting here. It says, from the root of the snake will come out a tsephah, this type of viper. And its fruit will be, you know, this other type of snake. So...
What's the rod of 29?
It's Shevet. It's Shevet.
So the Shevet
is broken.
There's a Shevet that's broken. And from it, a snake will come out.
And a flying seraph.
Put some wings on the snake. And we remember the story again of Aaron's. It wasn't a Shevet, it was a Mate. But still, it turned into, well, Moses's turned into a Nachash, a snake. And then Aaron's turned into a tanin, which is a serpent reptile thing, which you could say is a crocodile maybe. But very interesting when you think about this story and this story with something coming out of wood, and here a snake comes out of it. Maybe this was the staff of the Philistines. When we're talking about things that identify who you are, where you come from. And Isaiah is having some fun there. Yes.
No, oh. I just was adjusting my shirt.
Got something under your sleeves?
I will kill the famine. Your
I do that right
root.
What?
So again, the root there is a people group because they're going to die from famine.
Right.
So it's kind of like mixing the metaphor back and forth.
Yeah. Go to Ezekiel 7. Ezekiel chapter 7, verse 10. This is one of Ezekiel's happy prophecies about the end. The day is here, it has come, verse 10. Doom has burst forth. The rod has budded. Arrogance has blossomed. And it says that it has that same idea, Yatzah. The word for rod here is mate. So here we have our mate. Out of this mate is coming what? Here in Ezekiel.
Doom and destruction.
Arrogance.
Oh, pride.
Pride, what's your other translation?
Zadon.
I've got pride is about it. Violence has risen up into a rod.
What?
Willfulness.
So, like, shy. Yeah, and then the next verse says, what's the next verse say?
Violence has risen up into a rod. A rod again of wickedness.
So violence has risen, and you have a rod to punish the wicked. Mate Rasha. And then I look.
It's a rod to punish the wicked? It's not a rod of wickedness.
Well, again, it's kind of interpretation. It is a smichut there of, you know, a rod of wickedness, but I guess your rod of wickedness could be used to punish, depending on how you want to translate it, I guess. And then there's a very nice alliteration that follows with Ezekiel. It's very beautiful there. But we don't have a lot of time. And one last thing in Ezekiel 19. If you go to Ezekiel 19, verse 10. Your mother was like a vine in your vineyard, planted by the water. And so here he's talking to Israel. It was fruitful and full of branches. because of abundant water. Its branches were strong, fit for a ruler's scepter. And so here you've got Shevet, right? So
it's saying out of this tree or vineyard, you've got these pieces of wood, and it's used mate here. And then it says from that, some of these would be good for a Shevet right here. And then a Shevet to rule with.
Okay, verse 12. But it was plucked up in anger. It was thrown down to the ground. The east wind dried up its fruit. And so here we have again kind of this idea of fruit. Its strong branches broke off and withered. And here it's mate, for strong branch, mate uza. Strong branches withered. A fire consumed them. Now it is planted in the wilderness in a dry and thirsty land. Verse 14. A fire has gone out from its branch. Vatetse esh mimate. So, what do we have coming out of this rod?
Fire, right? We got fire coming out of this one. This mate.
And so it's no longer a strong branch, mate oz, and it's no longer a scepter, a shevet to rule. So Ezekiel's using a lot of the similar language here that we have from Aaron and from Isaiah 11 of these rods, these pieces of wood represent special callings, and what comes out of them. This really is like Harry Potter. What comes out of them kind of signifies who they are. And so out of the Philistine's rod, you got a snake. Out of the rebellious house, you've got arrogance coming out. Out of Israel, in this situation, you've got fire coming out because it's prophesying destruction. And out of Aaron, you've got the omen. And you think about God is watching over his word that he's saying to Jeremiah to do. And then with our whole thing with David and Jesse, you've got what is coming out. It's other pieces of the tree, but how is it described here, this person, this descendant? Right, it's tons of good fruit, of things that hang on this tree, on this 7 spirits here, and they all represent different things: wisdom, understanding, counsel, strength, knowledge, fear of the Lord. Yes.
I think I heard your translation say instead of fear of the Lord, loyalty.
Yeah.
That's
the NET translation.
Is that a Bible translation? I guess is my question.
That's Randy.
Randy?
Yeah, but.
Yeah, loyalty is a viable. I'm just saying that the connotation of fear versus loyalty is very different in English, so I'm kind of curious what the, obviously it could mean both, but it's the first time I've ever heard this word translated loyalty. I've never heard it translated
in English.
The net, a spirit that produces absolute loyalty to the Lord. So it's a combination, in their little note here, of knowledge and fear of the Lord. So.
But if you translate that knowledge and loyalty, that feels like a radically different translation in my English.
I mean, I think it's the idea of if you have the knowledge and you have the fear and you put the two together, it's,
gives birth to loyalty.
Knowledge and fear produces loyalty. I mean, I think that's the idea behind the translation. Taken together, the two terms emphasize the single quality of loyalty to the Lord, is what they have here.
Yeah, you would want to fear the Lord, right? Because fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? Fear of the Lord.
But again, if it's loyalty to the Lord, like what the nuance of the connotations.
Yeah.
Most of us don't have loyalty.
Yeah.
What struck me is that the
Okay, go ahead, Gemma.
I was just going to give it, struck me that whereas in the numbers where we started, we're talking about Aaron being identified as the one who is to be the priest, to be the high priest, to be the one who is standing before the Lord and so on. And what we're getting in Isaiah 11, it seemed to me, was that we've got somebody greater than Aaron. We've got the next high priest or the final high priest. It's not there in so many words. But it's always that this is the Spirit of the Lord is going to rest on him. The specifics of what is going to be on this man as against Aaron, who is just being called back to what he should be doing in the first place, in a way.
Right. Well,
the big difference, though, between these two is this is a priest and this is a king. So, you know, going along with the whole prophetic stuff with Jesus, this is, you know, you got to love this. Because this is combining those two anointed ones. And as we know in Second Temple Judaism, the understanding that there was a priest and a king that was coming, which is very popular at Qumran, you know, these anointed ones of the Lord, and I'm not going to go into like what all that means, but it was part of the tradition. And so maybe we see this same idea. My one thing just to add to this is going back to where I pointed out Judah, who slept with Tamar, and he had a mate with him. And so obviously Jesse and David are from Judah, but the word mate is what connects back up to Numbers. So there's a connection here that is even tighter between the idea of this rod that's part of Judah and being part of Jesse. Even though there's no mate here in Isaiah 11, there's no mate. There's a shevet, and there's all this imagery of this wood regrowing, these roots and these growths popping out. But there is no mate here. But it's that idea that something is coming out of this, just like something's coming out of these pieces of wood. I think that's the main connection there.
So you would say it's more of a connection with the mate.
Say again?
You would say,
yeah.
It's more of a connection.
Yeah.
There's something
coming out.
Comes forth.
Or something is brought out.
Right.
Yeah. So. But I definitely do think you could definitely read this in a messianic way if you were to go back in time.
So the question would be, all of these kind of connections, was this being developed during Second Temple Judaism prior to Jesus in like an expectation like with the Qumran set?
Yeah, well, not even Qumran, it's like Enoch. You go to the parables of Enoch, they love Isaiah 11 and the spirits that rest here, the seven spirits. Enoch has also a chosen one who has this seven spirits of the Lord resting upon him. And so parables of Enoch are, Flusser thinks they're earlier. They're not later. Where usually some people date Enoch a little bit later. He would say they go a little earlier in the time of Jesus. So I definitely think if you look in Jewish traditions, there is stuff about a priest priest and king, or they say Messiah Israel and Messiah Aaron is what they say in Qumran. So, yeah.
No wonder they have to die.
Yeah. Shabbat Shalom.